Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Guide to the Mental Health of Children and Young People, Q&A for Parents, Caregivers and Teachers, by Dr. Maynu Simmons, narrated by Polly Lee. Preface. Why was this book written? As a practicing child and adolescent psychiatrist with a special interest in mental health education, I have noticed a growing general awareness of mental health issues in children and young people. This awareness is important as it is alerting ever more people to the monumental scale of mental health difficulties in the next generation. However, developing awareness of youth mental health is only the first step in giving helpful support to children and young people. Unfortunately, I have heard from many parents, caregivers, and teachers that they don't feel they have the skills, knowledge, or training to look after children's and young people's mental health. This contrasts sharply with their confidence in sorting out physical health problems. Yet we know that developing brains and minds need looking after and nurturing in the same way that developing bodies do. This book tries to help bridge the gap of confidence and understanding many of you face when dealing with youth mental health issues. Although I know there are now many web-based resources bursting with mental health advice, I am aware that it can sometimes be a minefield to find reliable and useful information online. So, this book is meant as a starting point of information and advice. I give links to other reliable information resources, including books and websites, for those who want to dig deeper. I hope the book will be useful for both those of you dealing with current difficulties, as well as those of you who want to develop a more general understanding of the topic. My aim is to help you to develop an understanding of factors which have an impact on children's and young people's mental health, and give you some strategies for offering and accessing support when difficulties arise. I hope it's useful. How is this book structured? This book has three sections. Part 1 discusses some important factors that affect children's and young people's mental health and well-being, including exercise, diet, social relationships, and technology. Part 2 focuses on how to strengthen your relationships with children and young people and give them useful support. Part 3 explains some common mental health difficulties and disorders in young people, how we diagnose and manage them, and how to support children and young people with these issues. While some people may prefer to listen to this book from start to finish, you do not need to do so. If you prefer, you can listen to or consult each subsection separately. Part 1. What affects children's and young people's mental health? In Part 1 of this book, I'll look at various issues that can affect children's and young people's mental health. In the introductory chapter, I first discuss some key definitions, including mental health, well-being, and disorder. Then each of the main chapters in Part 1 examines important factors affecting mental health. In Chapter 1, I look at a range of biological processes which affect children's and young people's mental health, including attachment, genes and inheritance, the developing brain, and puberty. In Chapter 2, I go on to explore lifestyle factors which have a significant impact on children's and young people's mental health, including sleep, nutrition, exercise and movement, technology, bullying and academic pressures, and alcohol and drugs. In Chapter 3, I discuss the impact of relationships on mental health and look in more detail at family relationships, social and peer relationships, and romantic relationships and sex. In Chapter 4, I look at a range of issues that increase stress for children and young people, known as stressors. These stressors include abuse and neglect, adverse childhood experiences, ACEs, trauma, bereavement and parental separation, and finally, the impact of COVID and other global public health issues on mental health. In Chapter 5, I look specifically at vulnerability of special groups who are known to have an increased risk of mental health issues. Although I don't cover all possible vulnerable groups, I examine a few important examples, including intellectual disabilities, young people with gender identity difficulties and different sexual orientations, young people with additional health needs and illnesses, young carers, and finally, other vulnerable groups. Chapter 6 provides a summary of the previous chapters in Part 1 to draw together threads of important factors which have an impact on children's and young people's mental health. Introduction to Part 1 and Key Definitions. In this section, I introduce common terms, including mental health, mental well-being, and mental disorder. I look at how common youth mental disorders are and explain how we assess them. Finally, I consider how to support children and young people with mental disorders. What is mental health? What about mental well-being, mental fitness, and mental flourishing? Mental well-being, also often known as mental fitness, describes your mental state, i.e., how you are feeling and how well you can cope with day-to-day life, which can change quickly. Mental and physical fitness are of equal importance. Mental flourishing is the state of experiencing positive emotions, psychological and social functioning most of the time, and enables you to engage with a meaningful life. Its opposite state is languishing, where people may describe their lives as hollow or empty. Mental health, according to the World Health Organization, WHO, is a state of well-being in which the individual realizes his or her own abilities, can cope with the normal stresses of life, can work productively and fruitfully, and is able to make a contribution to his or her community. Mental health is a longer-term state than mental well-being or fitness, and tends to change more gradually. How are mental health and well-being linked? Mental health and well-being are linked and are overlapping concepts, but they are not the same. If you experience difficulties with mental well-being for some time, you are more likely to develop mental health problems. For example, children who live in very deprived communities with little support are much more vulnerable to mental health problems than those from well-off communities with good support from parents and caregivers. If you already have a mental health problem, like bipolar disorder, you are more likely to have periods of low mental well-being. However, it's also worth noting that people with mental health problems can also have times when they experience positive well-being. In our example, the person with bipolar disorder can have periods when their well-being is very good, for example, in between episodes of illness. That's why aiming to improve mental well-being is important, whatever your mental health status. Which factors can affect mental well-being and mental health? Several factors can affect mental well-being and mental health. Positive mental well-being is influenced by lifestyle factors like sleep, diet, and exercise. positive relationships as well as school and home experiences. Children who develop in lower stress environments will generally be more able to experience positive mental well-being. A mixture of inherited and environmental factors can interact to cause mental health problems. For example, when a parent has alcohol problems, the child has an increased risk of mental health problems. However, the child's risk of developing mental health problems is also influenced by other factors, such as their genetic makeup and their available support. This illustrates the complex interplay of both genes and environment, which make up an individual's risk of mental health difficulties. Many factors are common to both mental well-being and mental health. For example, severe early attachment difficulties, stress and trauma, and poverty and inherited factors can affect both mental health and mental well-being. A 2016 UK study by Patelay and Fitzsimmons looked at predictors of mental illness and well-being in 11-year-olds. It showed that mental well-being was predicted by aspects of a child's social life and relationships, such as bullying and perception of feeling connected to others at school. On the other hand, other factors, such as underlying health problems, are more likely to predispose to mental health disorders. Mental health disorders are also strongly affected by other important factors, such as inheritance. What is a mental health disorder? What about a mental condition? There is often confusion around whether to use the term mental disorder or condition. A good rule of thumb is as follows. A mental health disorder is a behavioural or mental pattern of symptoms that causes significant change which can impair functioning. There is a noticeable step change in functioning from a period of being well to being mentally ill. For example, you can have an episode of depression where you become unwell and struggle to function, after which you recover. A mental health condition is a term used for inborn difficulties such as autism and ADHD, where the brain is wired up differently. There isn't a significant step change in functioning from being well to being unwell. Instead, the brain is on a different developmental pathway to what is typical, and a condition will evolve over time. There isn't a specific cure for mental conditions such as autism. What proportion of young people have a mental health disorder? 1 in 6 children and young people, aged 5 to 19 years, in the UK in 2021, had at least one mental health disorder. 50% of mental disorders develop by age 14. This shows why investing in young people's mental health is so important and has long-term implications. How do mental health professionals assess someone's mental health? Mental health professionals are trained to assess a person's mental state. This includes assessing how someone looks, speaks, understands, and behaves. We ask questions about mood, thoughts, and the person's ability to understand experiences. Observation of play and behaviour is often more helpful in younger children than asking direct questions. Taking a history of a child's or young person's difficulties is a core part of a mental health assessment. There is a systematic format for the process of gathering information, which involves getting key information from the young person or child themselves, if possible. Gathering information from significant adults around the child is a crucial part of the assessment. We also look at a child's or young person's ability to function or do the activities needed to manage at school, family life, or friendships. How can you best support children's mental well-being? You can help children and young people develop positive mental well-being and learn coping skills for managing stress. Firstly, ensure children's basic needs are met, including offering supportive care and providing them with enough food, shelter, rest, security, and warmth. Maslow, a psychologist writing in 1943, famously set out a pyramid of basic needs. Food, water, rest, warmth, and safety are at the bottom of the pyramid, and being able to think creatively is at the top. Attend to the child's inner psychological needs. What makes each child tick? Understanding this is an evolving process, and the best approach is to listen to the child and try to make sense of their thinking. Seek out and understand helpful materials. By listening to this book, you are one step ahead. You can also consult useful online resources. For example, the Royal College of Psychiatrists website, rcpsych.ac.uk. That's rcpsych.ac.uk to support positive mental health and well-being. Key points. We should help our children and young people to aim for a state where their mental well-being is flourishing. We can also help equip young people to positively manage mental health difficulties and disorders. Mental health and well-being are different but overlapping concepts. Mental well-being describes your mental state and can change quickly. Mental health describes a longer-term measure of mental functioning. Even if you are mentally unwell, you can still improve your well-being. For example, by looking after your sleep and diet, and by developing positive relationships. It is common for young people to struggle with their mental health. Half of mental disorders start in adolescence. To look after children's mental health, it is important that we meet both their basic psychological as well as their physical needs. 1. Biological processes affecting mental health. In this chapter, we discuss a range of biological processes and factors which affect youth mental health, including attachment, genes and inheritance, the developing brain, and puberty. We think about how gaining a better understanding of children's biology can allow you to better support your children's mental health. Attachment. Building strong bonds between children and their caregivers is likely to be the most important factor in protecting children's mental health and well-being. Nurturing children through their early years is a crucial but often underappreciated task. Research shows that attachment difficulties underlie many mental health problems. Attachment is the emotional bond between baby and parent or caregiver. All baby animals, including our children, have evolved to attach to their main caregivers to protect themselves from threats. The psychoanalyst John Bowlby developed the theory of attachment to help explain why infants become so distressed when separated from their parents. This section on attachment gives a brief overview on the topic. Please note, I discuss specific difficulties with attachment in part 3 of this book. Why is attachment important? A baby needs a strong and supportive relationship with at least one main caregiver for their healthy development. The caregiver is usually the biological parent, but can be another adult who takes on the parental role. A caregiver meeting a baby's needs is not just about providing the baby with food, it is also about providing emotional comfort. Important experiments with monkeys in the 1950s, led by Harry Harlow, an American psychologist who pioneered work on separation anxiety, which separated baby monkeys from their mothers, paved the way for humans developing a better understanding of the importance of early attachment relationships. These experiments showed it is the sensitive response and security of the caregiver that are more important for the baby's development than the caregiver just providing food. If the caregiver is sensitive to the baby's needs and is consistently there for them, the baby will use the caregiver as a secure base from which to explore in a healthy way, and then follow a path of healthy emotional development. As the baby develops, they learn they will be supported and contained when they express their emotions, rather than abandoned. No caregiver is perfect and fully sensitive all the time, but the important thing is to be sensitive and consistent with caregiving most of the time. Hence, a key part of this relationship is helping children learn to regulate their emotions. A secure attachment relationship helps our children develop emotionally and socially, including in their future relationships. It gives the child an internal working model of relationships, which helps them to develop future healthy relationships. Is there a biological change in our bodies which helps us with attaching to our children? There are chemical changes within our bodies in response to having children. Oxytocin is an important bonding hormone produced in the base of brains of new parents. Mothers produce oxytocin in labour, breastfeeding, and positive touch. Oxytocin helps with birth, bonding, attachment, trust, and social interaction. The more oxytocin produced in mothers, the more attachment behaviour a mother shows, and the more oxytocin in turn produced by the infant. Fathers and adoptive mothers who show attachment behaviours towards their babies also produce oxytocin. Are there different attachment styles or behaviours? What are they? Mary Ainsworth was a skilled researcher and colleague of John Bowlby, who looked at attachment behaviours in young children. She set up experiments where she separated babies from mothers for a short time. She then came up with different categories of attachment behaviours based on how babies responded to their parent leaving the room and then reuniting with them. She described the following main attachment styles. Securely attached babies got upset when their parent left the room, but could still easily be comforted upon their parent's return. Ainsworth found that about 70% of babies showed a secure attachment style. There were the following subtypes of insecurely attached babies. 1. Anxious or ambivalent babies became extremely distressed when their parent left the room and could not easily be comforted when they returned. 2. Avoidant babies didn't seem distressed when their parents left them and actively avoided contact once the parent returned. 3. Disorganized babies displayed a variety of odd, unusual, contradictory, or conflicted behavior when the parent left them and returned. This style was described after the previous two styles and is more common where the parent has been abusive or neglectful in some way to the child. The attachment style of the babies is closely related to relationship patterns in the home. The securely attached children had parents who were responsive to their needs. The insecurely attached children had parents who didn't respond to their needs or were inconsistent in their care. What happens if attachment is not secure? The caregiver's sensitivity to the child has a significant impact on the attachment relationship. However, there are also several other factors which affect this relationship, including factors within the child, the parent, and the environment. If attachment early in life is not secure, children are at increased risk of problem behaviours and mental health conditions. This is an important reason why children adopted into the most loving and stable homes are still at higher risk of mental health problems and often need more specialist support to help them cope in the future than those who had experienced secure attachments. Attachment disorders can happen when there have been significant problems with the attachment relationship developing. If a child develops a strong internal working model of relationships, they have a better chance of developing strong relationships in adult life. How do attachment behaviors change with age? Attachment develops with age, brain development, and social experiences. Young children gradually learn that their caregiver will return after separation. It is normal for securely attached babies and toddlers to be clingy to their caregiver and show distress on separation. Hence, settling into a nursery can be tough. As children reach early primary school age, most of them trust that their caregiver will be there for them. But the goal is still to keep carers close. If there is a change at home, for example, a new baby is born, the attachment system is disrupted, and the child may need extra support to get back on track. By late primary school age, children become more independent from caregivers and can self-regulate their emotions better. So the important thing is for caregivers to be available when needed. A child will manage longer separations if they are secure in knowing parents will be there for them when needed. By teenage years, if the attachment system is secure, children can gradually explore who they want to be and develop their independence if they have adequate caregiver support to do so. Triggers which could upset the system include an attachment figure becoming less available, parents separating, or a parent having to put energy into elderly relatives could cause this. How can you nurture healthy attachment with your child? The most important way you can help your children is to be consistently physically and emotionally available to them. This availability will need to continue and adapt throughout the child's development. Here are some important principles you can follow at different stages. With babies and young children, you can follow their lead and play with them, and ensure they have stable and secure care. Showing you are attentive to your baby's cues and responding appropriately in a sensitive two-way interaction is known as serve and return. This is a tennis analogy. The baby serves their cue and you respond sensitively, which shows the baby they are important and that what they do counts as it is worth responding to. As children get older, it is important to show them you are always there for them and will provide them with a secure base. You should try hard to listen to them and play with them and let them know you are always there for them. Play is the way children work through their feelings, so playing with them helps strengthen our bonds. In teenagers, the attachment relationship may be at threat as children grow up and develop independence. The important thing is to try and listen to what your children's changing needs are so that you can continue to nurture the relationship. Key points. The attachment relationship between caregiver and child is central to a child's healthy development and is a crucial factor in supporting their positive mental health and well-being. There are different types of insecure attachment, all of which can be problematic for children's emotional development and their ability to form future relationships. There may be challenges to the attachment relationship as children grow up. If you try to provide your child with a secure base from which to explore, you can help them with their social and emotional development and their gradual development of independence. Genes and inheritance.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?